Hey there. Ready to dive into some history?
I'm ready. Let's do it.
Today we're tackling the trial and crucifixion of Jesus.
Ooh, that's a big one.
And trust me, this isn't your typical Sunday school recap.
Yeah, we're going way deeper than that.
We're going deep with insights from Dr. Mark Jennings and his lecture on the Gospel of Mark, chapter 15.
One of the most intense chapters.
Get ready to uncover some fascinating historical details. And maybe even challenge a few assumptions along the way.
All right. Who knows what we might discover?
Ever wondered about the real Pilate, beyond the Sunday school stories?
Oh, yeah. He was a much more complex figure than most people realize.
Well, get ready for some surprises. Let's start by transporting ourselves back to that trial before Pilate.
Okay, I can picture it.
You've got Jesus standing accused before this powerful Roman governor. But here's something you might not have realized.
What's that?
The Jewish Sanhedrin, their highest court, couldn't actually carry out the death sentence themselves.
Well, that's right. They needed Pilate's approval. Roman authority had stripped local bodies like the Sanhedrin of the power to issue capital punishment.
So even if they believed Jesus was guilty,
which they definitely did,
they needed Pilate's okay to actually execute him.
Yeah, it's this complex interplay of religious and political power that makes this period so fascinating.
Talk about a political chess match.
Right, like who's really calling the shots here?
And what's even more interesting is that the fact that Jesus was crucified under Pontius Pilate.
Yeah, that's pretty much undisputed.
Is pretty much universally accepted by historians.
Even those outside of religious scholarship.
It's one of those rare points of agreement, you know?
Yeah, you don't see that very often in ancient history.
But this is where it gets really thought-provoking.
I love those moments.
Dr. Jennings points out some historical challenges that scholars often grapple with regarding the trial.
I'm curious. What kind of challenges?
For one, the portrayal of Pilate's character in Mark's gospel doesn't exactly line up with what we know about him from other historical accounts.
So, how is Mark portraying Pilate differently?
Well, if you look at sources outside the gospels, Pilate is generally depicted as a pretty ruthless figure.
Known for his cruelty and antagonism toward the Jews.
Yet in Mark's account, he appears almost hesitant.
Even somewhat sympathetic to Jesus.
Yeah, it's a bit of a head-scratcher.
That is perplexing.
Makes you wonder if there's more to the story, right?
Definitely makes you think.
And it's not just Pilate's portrayal that raises questions.
Oh, there's more.
There's also the whole issue of Barabbas and his release.
You mean the prisoner who was released instead of Jesus?
Which, as you know, features prominently in all four Gospels.
Right. Everyone always talks about Barabbas.
The story goes that Pilate offers to release a prisoner during Passover.
Sort of like a holiday tradition, I guess.
And the crowd chooses Barabbas over Jesus.
Tough choice right there.
But, and this is a big...
But I sense a plot twist coming.
Outside of the Gospels, there's not a lot of historical evidence to support this custom of releasing a prisoner.
So, are we saying the Barabbas story might not be accurate?
So, naturally, some scholars have questioned the authenticity of this account.
That makes sense.
So, you've got these two major points of contention. Pilate's seemingly uncharacteristic behavior.
And the lack of external evidence for the Barabbas tradition.
How does Dr. Jennings address these seemingly contradictory pieces of the puzzle?
I'm all ears. Let's hear it.
He does so by offering some pretty compelling counterarguments.
I love a good counterargument.
First, regarding Pilate, while he certainly possessed those less than admirable qualities.
You mean like being cruel and antagonistic?
He also had a history of conflict with the Jewish leadership.
They didn't exactly get along, did they?
And there's evidence suggesting that complaints about his conduct may have even reached Rome.
So maybe he was feeling the pressure, worried about his position.
Makes sense. Worried about his position and trying to avoid any further trouble with the emperor.
Yeah, you don't want to get on the wrong side of Caesar. That could explain why he might have been more inclined to appease the Jewish authorities in this particular instance.
Even if it meant sacrificing Jesus.
It's a tough position to be in.
It really sheds light on the political complexities at play, doesn't it?
For sure. It's not as simple as it might seem at first glance.
But let's not forget, even if he appeared momentarily sympathetic, Pilate ultimately made the decision to crucify Jesus.
Right. He still bears the weight of that decision.
Absolutely. It's not a free pass.
Okay, so what about Barabbas? How does Dr. Jennings explain that?
Now, turning to the Barabbas question, Dr. Jennings points out that releasing prisoners as a means of quelling unrest or demonstrating mercy.
Interesting.
Wasn't entirely unheard of among ancient rulers.
So there might be some precedent for it after all.
We see similar practices in other historical contexts.
Okay, so it's not totally out there.
So it's not completely out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah, it's starting to make more sense now.
And here's where I find Mark's gospel so captivating.
I agree. Mark is a great storyteller.
He includes these little details that often get overlooked.
I love those little details.
But they're like hidden clues that add so much depth to the story.
They can really unlock a whole new layer of understanding.
For example, he names not only Simon of Cyrene,
the guy who helped carry the cross,
the man forced to help carry Jesus's cross, but also Simon's two sons, Alexander and Rufus.
Huh. Why mention the sons?
Why mention the sons unless there was a reason?
Yeah, you're right. It must be significant.
That detail is significant for a couple of reasons.
Okay, I'm listening.
First, it suggests that Mark may have had access to early Christian eyewitnesses.
People who actually saw what happened.
People who knew these individuals and their connection to the events.
Wow, so he might have gotten the story straight from the source.
And secondly, one of those sons, Rufus,
interesting,
is potentially linked to the church in Rome, which is where many scholars believe Mark's gospel was written.
So this connection adds weight to the idea that Mark's account is based on firsthand accounts.
This connection strengthens the idea that Mark was drawing on firsthand accounts, making his gospel all the more compelling.
It's like getting a glimpse into history through the eyes of someone who was actually there.
Wow, that's incredible.
It really is. You never know what you might discover when you dig a little deeper.
It's like those small details unlock a whole new layer of understanding.
And it's not just about the details, right? It's about what those details tell us about the bigger picture.
It makes you wonder what other hidden gems are tucked away in these ancient texts.
There's always something new to learn.
It's what makes studying history so rewarding, isn't it?
Absolutely. You never know what you might discover.
And the fact that the Barabbas story appears in all four Gospels.
Okay, so it's a consistent theme.
Along with the consistent use of the title King of the Jews.
A title that Romans would use more than the Jews themselves, probably.
Which was more likely a Roman designation than one used by early Christians, further supports its authenticity.
So maybe there's more truth to the Barabbas story than some scholars initially thought.
So, taking all of this into account, what does it tell us about the political dynamics of that time? How did these forces ultimately lead to Jesus's crucifixion?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? Yeah, it really highlights the complex interplay of power,
right,
religion, and personal agendas.
And how those all came crashing together.
That shaped this period.
Yeah.
And as we delve into the crucifixion itself.
Right, moving into the
afterlife. Dr. Jennings helps us understand that this event was much more than just a brutal execution.
It was a very public.
It was a calculated display of Roman power.
Display, right.
A public spectacle designed to instill fear and deter any thoughts of rebellion.
Yeah, it's hard to even imagine what it must have been like.
Oh, absolutely.
To witness such a horrific event.
It was a slow, agonizing death, often taking days.
Oh, wow.
And for Roman citizens, crucifixion was considered the most shameful death imaginable.
The most shameful?
Think about it. Even in our modern context, the image of the cross.
It still evokes very.
Evokes strong emotion.
Strong emotions.
Absolutely.
And Dr. Jennings points out a particularly striking detail in Mark's account.
What's that?
The same crowds that had previously protected Jesus from arrest.
Yeah, when they were trying to come and get him at Gethsemane.
Are now the ones demanding his death.
That's wild, isn't it?
What do you make of that certain shift?
It's a powerful illustration of the fickleness of crowds, how easily they can be swayed by emotions and external pressures.
Yeah, that mob mentality.
It also speaks to the volatile nature of the situation. The religious leaders were adept at manipulating public opinion, using fear and prejudice to turn the crowd against Jesus.
Oh, for sure. Like they were riling everybody up.
It's a sobering reminder.
Like really playing on their fears.
Of how quickly things can change, how even those who seem to support you can turn against you in an instant.
It's a huge reminder of that, isn't it?
And Mark doesn't shy away from the graphic details of the events leading up to the crucifixion.
Right. He gets into it.
He describes the soldiers mocking Jesus, dressing him in a purple robe, forcing a crown of thorns onto his head.
All very visual.
And shouting, "Hail, King of the Jews!"
Just brutal.
These were deliberate acts of humiliation.
Oh, yeah.
Intended to strip Jesus of any dignity and reinforce Roman dominance.
It's heartbreaking to picture Jesus enduring such cruelty, especially after everything he'd already been through.
And the physical torment didn't end there.
Like, it just keeps going.
Imagine Jesus, already weakened from beatings and trials, being forced to carry his own cross toward Golgotha.
Golgotha.
The place of execution.
The place of the skull.
Which would have been a public location.
Oh, yeah, like everybody had to see it.
A place where people would have witnessed this gruesome spectacle.
Yeah, so a huge part of the punishment was also the public shame and humiliation of it.
Absolutely.
And as Jesus is making his way there,
he's
offered wine mixed with myrrh.
Yeah, people often misunderstand that detail.
I've always wondered about that detail.
It wasn't an act of kindness.
Was it an act of mercy?
Yeah.
A way to ease his suffering?
That's a common misconception. While some believe it may have been intended as a painkiller,
okay.
Dr. Jennings suggests that, given the context and Mark's portrayal of the soldiers, it was more likely a bitter insult.
Like one more.
Another way to mock and torment him in his final moments.
Wow, so even in his most vulnerable state, Jesus was met with cruelty.
That's right.
It really challenges the notion that there was any compassion shown to him by his executioners.
I know, it's a hard truth to swallow.
And what's remarkable is that despite his exhaustion,
right,
and the immense pain he must have been enduring,
totally,
Jesus refuses the drink.
That takes so much willpower.
This speaks volumes about his mental fortitude.
Oh, yeah.
His unwavering resolve, even in the face of death.
It's a testament to his inner strength, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely.
And here's something else Dr. Jennings highlights that I found particularly insightful.
Okay.
He points out that Mark's account focuses less on the physical brutality of the crucifixion itself.
Yeah, which we might expect.
And more on the reactions of those around Jesus.
Like what they were doing and saying?
The mocking, the gambling for his clothes, the jeering.
Right, like their behavior is really front and center.
Why do you think Mark chose to emphasize those details?
It's an interesting question.
Maybe he wanted to convey the emotional and spiritual weight of what was happening rather than just dwelling on the physical torment.
Yeah, maybe he wanted to show the contrast between Jesus' suffering and the callousness of the people around him.
Precisely. By shifting the focus to the responses of the crowd,
okay,
Mark underscores the theological significance of Jesus' sacrifice.
So it's not just about the physical pain.
It's not just a brutal execution.
Right.
It's a turning point in history, a cosmic event with profound implications.
And by highlighting the callous indifference and even cruelty of those present.
Right, those stark contrasts.
Mark invites us to confront our own capacity for both good and evil.
It's a challenge to examine our own hearts.
Yeah, like where would we stand in that crowd?
And consider how we would have responded in such a situation.
That's such a powerful insight.
It really is.
It takes the story beyond a simple historical account and forces us to engage with its deeper meaning.
And to ask ourselves some hard questions.
It's a reminder that even the most horrific events can hold profound lessons for humanity.
I think that's a perfect note to end on.
It really makes you think, doesn't it?
It does.
I mean, we often hear about the trial and crucifixion.
Like the broad strokes of the story.
But Dr. Jennings' analysis adds this whole other layer of depth and meaning.
He really brings it to life.
So as we wrap up our deep dive with Dr. Jennings,
okay,
what are some of the key takeaways he leaves us with?
Well, he really emphasizes how crucial it is to challenge those common assumptions we often have about these events.
Right. Like to not just take things at face value.
You know, to go beyond the surface level.
Okay.
And grapple with the messy historical and political realities of the time.
And to consider the motivations of all the different players.
Right? For sure, everybody had their own agenda.
It wasn't just a simple story of good versus evil.
Exactly. Dr. Jennings wants us to see the complexities, the human drama that unfolded alongside the theological significance.
And in light of all that, he leaves us with this really thought-provoking question.
Oh, I like those.
And it's one I'd love for you to consider as well.
Okay, hit me with it.
Given all the political maneuvering and the conflicting perspectives surrounding Jesus' trial and crucifixion, how does this deeper understanding impact your view of the significance of his sacrifice?
Wow, that's a big one.
It's a powerful question because it pushes us.
Really makes you pause.
To think critically about how we interpret history, faith,
and the enduring legacy of Jesus.
It encourages us to move beyond those familiar narratives.
Right, to challenge what we think we know.
And dig deeper into the historical context, the human drama, and the enduring theological questions surrounding this pivotal event.
And maybe even to re-examine our own assumptions and biases, right?
That's for sure.
How do our own experiences and perspectives shape the way we view these events?
That's such an important point.
We all bring our own baggage to the table, so to speak.
So there you have it. Our deep dive into the trial and crucifixion of Jesus through the lens of Dr. Mark Jennings' insights.
That was a great discussion.
Hopefully this has given you a fresh perspective.
And some new insights to ponder.
And sparked a desire to explore even further.
Yeah, maybe you'll be inspired to check out Dr. Jennings' full lecture. Or perhaps delve into some other historical sources.
Or commentaries on the Gospel of Mark.
There's so much more to learn about this.
Whatever path you choose, keep asking those tough questions.
Don't be afraid to challenge the status quo.
Keep seeking understanding and keep diving deep. And here's something to ponder as you continue exploring this topic on your own.
I'm ready for it.
We've talked a lot about the political machinations.
All the backroom deals.
And the historical context surrounding the crucifixion.
The big picture stuff.
But what about the personal impact?
Okay, yeah.
How might the events of that day have shaped the lives and beliefs of those who witnessed it firsthand?
Like eyewitnesses.
Like Simon of Cyrene and his sons.
That's a great point.
Their experience offers a unique window into the human cost of this pivotal event in history.
Yeah, we often forget about the individuals who were caught in the crossfire.
Until next time.